listening to Electrician Live with your host, Paul Abernathy and Jay Brunberg.
What up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Electrician Live. My name is Paul Abernathy, your host as always, and with me, my co-host each week, as always, Mr. Jay Grunberg, the Basement King. Welcome, Jay. You ever noticed
that, what is up, Mr. Paul?
Have you ever noticed I never get any of the applause? It's always right before you.
You are first on the introduction. Yeah, like, this is true. The Paul Show with his lame co-host. No, I'm just joking.
That's because I control the buttons, okay? I control the buttons. Well, welcome to the show tonight, everybody. It's a glorious Thursday evening. And if you're new to the show, you never come before, this is a show where Jay and I talk about all different types of topics. Some of them are sent to us by viewers. Some of them are generated by us. A lot of them are generated by Jay. And I'm usually the code guy, so when I generate something, it's going to be code. So in an effort not to always be code, we kind of like to mix it up a little bit and talk about different topics. So we're going to do that. We're going to do that tonight. But I guess, Jay, before we get into how our weeks are going, we might as well get out of the way. Our sponsor for this evening, as you see at the bottom of the screen, everybody, Electrician Pride. We still have the CBD still sponsored, but that's over on electricianlive.com. You can click on the links there if you're interested in the CBD stuff. And I'll tell you a little story about the CBD here in a minute, about my son. So anyway.
Did he overdose on it?
No, he had to do a drug test for something, and he was freaking out that this CBD that he does was going to fail the drug test. So it was kind of funny. But anyway, I guess it wouldn't have been funny if he failed it or not. But anyway, let's go to the sponsor, and then we will get into to tonight's topic. Today's show is sponsored by electricianpride.com, your one-stop shop for electrician-specific t-shirts, hoodies, phone cases, mugs, die-cut stickers, leggings, and so much more. Featuring unique designs for electricians, journeymen, and master electricians, as well as electrical engineers and electrical inspectors. For more information on all the products that are available, visit us at www.electricianpride.com today. All right. And of course, we have more than just leggings and all that stuff, man. We have polos now. Check this out, Jay. Check out this.
That's sharp.
The Gods of Current. Embroidered shirts, polo shirts.
That's nice.
Got the hats, got different types of hats, got jackets with this logo on it, and all kinds of stuff over at the website. So go check it out on our website. Code Strong stuff is also available. Got the beanie hats and mugs and all that good stuff that you can spend your hard-earned money on. All right, so welcome again tonight. And so I guess, like we always start out with, Jay, how was your week?
You know, it's been kind of hectic, but it's been good, man. Really good week. The addition at our place is painted. It's fully got painted today.
Awesome.
So, again, it's this addition is, as it gets down to the final stages, you just kind of take a big, deep breath in and exhale out, knowing that there's light at the end of the tunnel, because there's a lot of work to be put in to these additions. And it wears, man. The wife, she hates the dust coming in and out. She's always mopping, "Hey, those slippers are for out there," and yelling at me. And, you know, I'm a guy, so I just keep, if I've already gone halfway, I'm probably going to go all the way with them on.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm sorry, babe.
Just do it and ask for forgiveness, that type of thing.
That's right. Awesome. Other than that, but work-wise, is going good. We're staying busy. We're knocking them out. Cool. So how was your week?
It's good week. Good week. Signing up students and grading, a lot of grading, dealing with those type of things. Also, most people know that obviously I'm also with Encore Wire, so a lot of issues going on with the wire and cable industry that I deal with on a daily basis as well. So, and then of course, here, Brittany and Zach and Darlene, everybody holds the fort and keeps everything going, and And so it's all good. It's all good. I don't know anything before we get started tonight's topic. I don't know of anything radical that's going on in our world. Just a lot more of the swag stuff, new graphics and things like that. But other than that, that's just about it. Still working on my book, latest book, exam prep book that I'm working on, which is slated to be done at the end of this year. So hopefully I'll be done by then. I hope I'm done by then. It's 20 chapters and I've only done a couple, so I better get on it. And we had a good last night. For those that are in our Fast Tracks program, or also the general and VIP members over on this YouTube channel that subscribe, you have access to our Wednesday night. We had a good Wednesday night. You were there, a little tardy, yep. But you're there. And we went over ranges again, everything you'd really need to know about ranges, calculations. So that was, good. We've done that a couple, at least one other time, but it was so many students that cycle into the program. Okay. That type of thing. I don't do a whole lot of stuff for inspectors. Sorry, Carlos. I could, but I'm an NEC guy. So inspectors would be more code. And everybody tells me that they don't want me to come on Electrician Live and just talk code. So I do that all the time, day in and day out, every day. That's so they're like, can you do something a little different on Electrician Live? So that's why we come up with other topics, because I could talk code all day long.
Well, let me ask you. So how many videos do you have on YouTube that you're just breaking down? When did you start your channel? What year did you actually start?
Actually, the channel, YouTube channel, was started in 2014. I've been doing it since, I think, 2004, back when it was called 1,000 Mics. Oh, he means swag. Yeah, I've got some inspector stuff. I got inspector stickers, but yeah, we'll add more of the inspector stuff to the swag over on the website. I'm sorry, I thought you talked about training. I started back in 2004, and I was doing something called 1,000 Mics, and they weren't even called podcasts back then, but I was doing them, and then I was uploading them to a kind of like a Google Doc or whatever. I was uploading them and then made them available and that type of thing, and was uploading that type of stuff a way long time ago, and I did a lot of videos. There's a lot of people that remember all the way back then that used to come and partake in some of the videos. But that's when I started, but it didn't really get on YouTube. And I'm not a big YouTuber. We only have probably, I think it's like 15,000 subscribers, unlike people that got hundreds of thousands. But we're very niche-y. It's code. And so usually people utilize us for what they need, and that is to get their license, and then they move on.
And then once they pass that exam, they're like, hey, man, it was a good ride, but... Yeah, this is over. This relationship,
and I'm okay with that. And I'm okay with that. I get it.
Right.
As long as they know, they always know they can come back if they need to refresh something, and you always try to learn, teach them something new. But that's that's kind of the relationship I have with none of our online stuff is designed to be a money generator. People ask, how much do you make a month for your videos and things like that? Well, everything's to gear towards my courses. I mean, that's what I do. I do courses. I teach code. I'm not trying to be a YouTube influencer, if you will.
Right.
I'm just trying to, we're trying to, and so that's why most people notice that a lot of our stuff has gone private rather than public, because everybody's teaching the public. It's not beneficial to my business model to do that anymore. Everybody loves to save the world, but I'm not interested in it anymore. I'm not interested in saving the world. I'm into my business and my, things like that. So anyway, so that's kind of how it started with me. And, we do a lot more podcasts. I should mention that people listening over at the podcast as well. You can listen to the podcasts live over on electricianlive.com, that type of thing. So, That type of stuff. So everybody knows me, knows I'm a purely a code guy. In many cases, not very personable guy, I guess. If I'm on a code hearing or code panel, most of the time they'll refer to me as a, and I hope I don't offend anybody by saying this, they refer to me as a dick. But at the end of the day, it's, I don't care. I'm after the answers, and that's it. That's it. I'm the guy in the front row that will question whoever's on stage, because if it's not right, it's not right. And sometimes that rubs people the wrong way, and that's okay. I never got into this business, Jay, to be friends with people. I got into this business to teach people. If I make friends along the way, it's a wonderful thing. That type of thing. But that's kind of where I started with it. And that's why I teach. And YouTube and all that ended up being my platform that allowed me to be able to get that message out, that type of thing.
That's so awesome, man. I see a lot of guys that have come out in the last year or two. And when I was doing research on videos to invest in or programs to invest in, that's when I came across your channel. And you were actually doing the calculations on ranges back in 2016 or something. It was 4 or 5 years ago, and that's how I started watching your channel. And yeah, there's so much content over there that a person could probably watch a whole year's worth of content there.
Yeah, we do a lot more podcasts than we do videos these days, because videos takes a lot more effort. Podcasts, when I just, you know, people that know me know that those aren't anything that I upload. I'm going to tell you guys right there, you know it. Now, I've got my haters out there, and that's fine. But I can tell you right now, none of the stuff that I put out, whether you like it or not, is polished. In other words, when I turn the mic on, that is what you get. I don't edit it. I don't remove stuff. So I'm very keen that what comes out the mouth has to be accurate. And so, you know, it's just doing it so many years, doing that type of thing. So, I mean, I just enjoy doing that type of thing. So,
awesome. Well, let me give some shout outs.
We got some shout outs. Line.
Looks like Christy. She says, "Hey, everybody." She's new to the game, and yes, she is a female. I believe she joined us last week. So, thanks for joining again.
Let me scroll
Christy.
Back a little bit so I can see everybody. I see Anthony, my buddy down in Port St. Lucie. Very much a Marine guy. Loves Article 555. Nate in the house. Nate. We have Soldier of God with us tonight, so I feel extremely blessed. There you go, Carlos.
That's actually my brother-in-law.
Is it?
If you didn't know that.
Absolutely. There you go. I'm double blessed. There you go.
Yeah, he's awesome, man. Aaron is his name.
Aaron, thanks for coming,
Carlos. I think Carlos is actually from Denver. So big ups to Carlos. O and what do you say, Los Three? Los? I'll just say Los.
Oh, we're also over on the Facebook, but I can't see any of the chats on Facebook. So for everybody over there that's you know, over on Facebook that I can't see you, much love to you. Wish I could, you know, interact with you, but just know that I appreciate you. I'll figure out one day, the software will figure out how to put the stream chat on here for Facebook and not crash it. But it only does YouTube, so... let's see.
Carlos is from Arizona. I'm sorry, Arizona. Carlos. Must have been a different Carlos that was in here recently, and he was from Denver. So.
No, okay. All right, let's go into topic tonight. So the topic tonight is talking about safety on the job site, just having a conversation. Yep. We'll tell some stories about safety on a job site. Extremely important. I do see a lot of videos, a lot of things out there where people are just really cutting it up on job site. I would cringe if I'm an owner, but I get, you know, boys will be boys, men will be men, yada, 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 that type of thing. But we'll talk about that. And again, there's different aspects to safety. There's the safety aspect that you should think about every day when you get to the job site. And everybody's responsible for their own actions, but, you know, whoever's controlling the job site has to take control. So if it's the master or whoever, or the owner's there, whatever, they have to take control because it can get out of control very quickly. And then, of course, we'll intermingle that, Jay, I guess, with talking about different trades and how they get along on a job site, that type of thing, working with other trades, right? Which I've never had a problem with, because most people know I like to get in there after everybody's done everything, if I can time it right. You're right. Paul doesn't get in there and do that anymore, so he's no longer an electrician. You don't have to remind me of that. But I will remind you, I still have the license in multiple states, so I'm keeping it. But other than that, we'll just kind of kick that off, because what do you think? Talk a little bit about, just start residential. What do you do, Jay, your guys? How do you talk about safety with your guys and when it comes to job site safety?
So once a week we have a box talk walk box talk about safety. It's a safety box talk, we call it. And hold on. And we have multiple guys at different
sites. You
don't
have to get all choked up about it, okay? You ain't got to get all choked up about it. We're just talking safety. So you have a box talk, you know, soapbox talk, right?
Soapbox talk. You know, we go over, let's say one is maybe ladders, the proper way of going up and down a ladder and having your 3 points of contact and how you're not supposed to go on the back side of the rungs or maybe even the top rung or the second to top one. Again, stuff that we would think that is basic, we still have to emphasize and let these guys know, hey, if you're going to be on the top of a 4 foot ladder, maybe you should just go out to the van and grab a 6 foot ladder.
Sure.
You know, if you're going to be on that top rung of that 4 foot ladder where you're not supposed to because of, you know, support issues and just balance issues, I guess. And we see it all the time, right?
Put all the weight at the top, you know. I mean, it's if you lose your balance, it's, you know, you're not supposed to be on the top rung. You're not supposed to be standing on the top. See it all the time. I can go right now and probably go to Instagram and you'll see tons of people acting a fool, you know, and the only one, you know, it makes you cringe because if those videos are out there and somebody does get hurt, and I used to spend quite a bit of time in the courtroom as an expert, I can tell you right now, and for other reasons as well, been in court quite a bit, and I can tell you that they're going to use that against you. And if I was the owner and you got hurt, okay, if I was an owner and you got hurt, I'm not gonna pick up any tabs. I'm gonna let you rot. I don't care how much I'm gonna let you rot. If you can act like that on, if you act like that on my job site and you get hurt, I'm gonna let you rot. I'm not gonna hold your hand through it. So if you carry yourself professional and do everything and follow policies, then I'm there for you. But I'm not. I don't care. Call me what you want. I am not going to do it if you're going to do that kind of thing. Okay, go ahead. So you did your box talk safety, talk all those things.
We go over the whole weekly discussion. Sometimes if we're 2 weeks behind, we may catch up 2-1. And so then the guys sit down, they go over them, we read them out loud. A lot of times I let the guys interact, so they'll take one paragraph and then kind of rotate through. And then when we get done, we'll sign it, and we'll also talk about any other safety concerns on the job that they may have seen recently or maybe what the job that they're at presents. A lot of times we're in basements or remodels, so we go over, you know, open holes maybe by the plumber that, again, in the basements, they're always – drilling out concrete and kind of leaving that open until inspection happens. Well, we have to work around that open hole. So we want to be careful. And for those out there that say, hey, you know, I'm just trying to get the job done, I'm trying to hurry. My response to that is I'm paying you to go out to the van to grab another ladder.
Yeah, I mean, you want to get it done, but I'm still paying you.
I'm still paying you. And if you do get injured, you're probably, if you even get workman's comp, I think it comes out to like maybe 60%. You're not getting a full paycheck.
Right.
Just be safe.
Yeah, don't ask. And if you're not being safe, don't ask me as the owner to help you, other than what the workers' comp's going to be, that type of thing. And of course, you know, and as an owner, you'll make different visits to the site, and you'll know which employees acting like this or that. I mean, it's not something just, you know, they do it one and done. I mean, usually the culprits are always the culprit, right? So
sure.
you'll get a feel as the owner or whatever, you'll get a feel for it. But yeah, so just being safe, you know, so in residential, we're roughing things in. So there's no, you know, there's not really anything, you know, live. I mean, this is all rough in. This is just pulling cables and trimming out boxes and stuff like that. So, you know, on a residential project, we're just making sure that you're not leaving crap around that you could trip over. You're not doing things in a way that could create a hazard for the other trades, you know, things like that.
Oh, big time. With residential too, you're drilling through wood studs for the most part. So mm-hmm. make sure if anything is drilling neck level or higher, you know, obviously we're supposed to wear safety glasses. Mm-hmm. Some guys fog them up, but make sure I emphasize the guys, if you're drilling at chest level or higher, just make sure you throw them on. Mm-hmm. There's nothing wrong with that. If you're drilling down low, I get it. I get that. Make sure you're using the proper tool for the proper job. You're using the proper bits with the proper drill. If it doesn't fit, maybe ask somebody.
That's one big thing. Don't try to use the wrong tool for the wrong job. Just because you know the tool, well, I just grab this tool and try to use it. If it's not the right tool for the job, don't use it.
Don't use it. And you can tell it's not the right tool if you're trying to force it. If you're trying to, because the right tool, you don't have to force right. it. Usually does the job.
So many
for you,
tools out there on the market now that it's a tool for everything. So don't force it. That type of thing. I think safety culture starts from the top, though. So sure. The owner has to set the tone, okay? And has to set the tone. And, Anthony's exercising one quick way that I'll boot him out of this room, starts talking about other educators. We don't do that here, okay? Just a hint, Anthony. I'm just playing. But at the end of the day, talking about safety, being safety conscious and things like that. If you come as the owner to the job site and you wear your goggles and you protect good worksite safety practices, then everybody's going to follow. You know what I'm saying? That type of thing.
So, you know, a big thing for us, even though that we're in residential, is I tell the guys, you have to wear pants. You have to wear a steel toe or a composite boot, and you have to wear a sleeve that, you know, goes roughly down to the elbow. So, I mean, you just can't. And again, if you guys are out there and you guys are resi rats like us and you wear shorts, that's awesome. You know, and I used to wear it out in the field, too. And so when you say that the leadership comes from the top, I would wear shorts out there. And I thought, OK, well, I'm above everybody. You know, I got different color shirts. I drive a truck. I wear shorts. I'm okay, right? I'm the boss. And you could see other people actually when I'm on the job site, they kind of would cringe a little bit and say, hey, you know, I when can we wear shorts? And I'd say, no, that's not part of the deal. So instead of trying to explain it every time and causing that work tension, I just decided, you know what, if I'm requiring them to wear boots and pants out at the job sites, even though I may not be installing, I may just be there for a toolbox talk or dropping off material, who knows. I then started wearing pants and boots all the time. So
yeah, and it's kind of, again, it's setting the tone. Everybody else is gonna follow the tone. Anthony, I was just teasing you. No, I don't have a Florida specific, but ENEC I do. The National Electrical Code is Florida specific. It's all over the country, okay? But the business part, you're absolutely right. So, now, thinking about safety on a job site is also important things like I've seen guys that are at the trim out stage or whatever, and maybe the power's not on yet, and they're using a generator or something like that, and not putting the generator inside of the garage, just stupid stuff like that. You know, worried about carbon monoxide poisoning. It's just different things that people get in a rush or get quick and they don't think about on a residential. Leaning off the side of ladders because you can't reach something. Rigging something up because you can't get to the high point in the roof, the peak or something inside. And you just, your ladder's just a little too short. So people start rigging up things and trying to, to get to it. Then that's one of those things where accidents can happen. And so pretty much that. So residentially speaking, there's not, making sure you keep everything stored away and not a trip hazard and use the proper tools for the job. You're boring through studs, wear your goggles or if you have regular glasses, it can keep them out. All those type of things. The other part that I talk about is more the professionalism. I saw a couple of videos last week of helpers and journeymen fighting on job sites. Never should take place. I can tell you, you can say you're probably glad you never worked for me, but if you ever worked for me and you had a fight on the job site and you worked for me, if I'm fighting it, don't worry about it, okay? Even though the tone comes from the top because I'm doing it for a reason or I'm defending something. But if you're doing it, that's no place on the job site. And, of course, times have changed, okay? Times have changed, that type of thing. So here it's, job sites can lead to lawsuits and fights can lead to somebody getting hurt. A misplaced fight can cause somebody to fall and hit their head. And you know what? It can happen so quickly. If you've got a beef with somebody on your job site, take it off the job site. I don't care what you do when it's not on my time. You go somewhere else. But it doesn't need to be on, that type of thing,
Well, from the contractor standpoint, too, if my guys are out there fighting, and I got a good story to tell you guys, I could lose that contract. You know, that could definitely... and if that's basements, if that's 10 basements a month, I'm most likely going to get rid of whoever started it or both individuals and keep that contractor because that contractor is paying my bills and I'm loyal to them. Even though my guys are loyal to me, I have to make that choice. And when you do that fighting, you are putting your job at risk with the owner. And you don't ever want to be that guy. You know, when they say, don't be that guy. Don't be that guy.
Put me in a situation where you're messing with the owner's livelihood. If you want to act a fool and quit or whatever and do it and put your job at risk at your hourly rate, that's fine. But the moment that you, what is that old saying in that movie Friday? Messing with my money is like messing with my emotions. Smokey. You don't want to do that to an owner. And you certainly didn't want to.
The original Friday too.
Yeah, I think it was.
That was the original one. That was back in the day. Yeah. It's like I look at that one. I'm like, that's 20 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, you were a toddler, right? But I remember it. You know that type of thing. So.
Oh man.
But yeah, it's one of those type of things. Somebody else said on here also about, putting staples in with your side cutters. Slamming them into side cutters. It's not what it's intended for. There is a flat side on the short dimension of it that people use to hammer things like staples in. I don't have a problem with that, although we say use the right tool for the job. The manufacturer might intend that that's okay for that, but, not on the flat side where the short dimension, it's usually flat and, it would be all right. The other thing about staples is everybody thinks that you have to drive a staple until it touches the sheathing and the sheathing is pinned against the stud. That is not how you would drive a staple. Staple is only there to hold it in place. That's it. If you were to take it and staple it in and there was a gap between the staple and the actual NMB and you're thinking, oh, it's got to be tight, it's got to be... Does not. Securing supporting requirements in 334.30, it's not about driving it until that staple is all the way in contact with the sheathing. Okay. So you can save yourself a lot of issues there by just not trying to overdrive it, that type of thing. What else would we run into safety-wise before we shift to commercial and then we start the dreaded OSHA conversation? What else in residential will we think about?
Yeah, in the residential, you have to be careful inside attics if you're doing service work or remodel work because you don't know what type of attic you're going into. And if you're not savvy with the floor joist or the, I guess you'd call that the attic, the
trusses?
Ceiling. Trusses, yeah, the trusses. There you go. Because if it's a lower level, it can still be a ceiling and a floor joist. But when you're up on the trusses, if you don't have a good feel for where they're at, and there's a lot of insulation, and maybe even people storing stuff up there, you could easily fall through the gypsum board, the drywall up top. So you could easily put your leg right through there. So a lot of times, have you done that before?
Yeah.
I had to.
I did that in a service call where it was 98 degrees outside and up in the attic. I was up in the attic and it must have been 140 degrees. I was sweating like a pig and I was crawling across there and the ductwork looked like a spider web of, you know, you have the different types of ducking where you have all the trunk lines and it comes to a center mass and it comes out. It looks like one big, looked like a big tarantula and they're going all over the place. And, you know, and so you're trying to get over that. Don't want to crush it. Because last thing you want is them to, because you know what will happen, right? The last time I'm up there and somebody will go, well, the air conditioner didn't work worth anything since the electrician was up there. Oh, he must have crushed one of the ducts, you know, or he must have crushed one of the supplies or something like. It's always going to be the electrician's fault. It's just the way it always is. It worked before he messed with it. Then I'm like, what'd you call me here for? It didn't work. But anyway, yeah, I was doing that and I was doing my best to try to, it was a bunch of trunks that were going, not trunks. The different supplies that were overlapping, and I was stepping over one of them, and the foot just missed the bottom of the truss, and I didn't go all the way. The foot didn't go all the way through the ceiling, but it obviously it went through enough that it cracked the gypsum down to the bottom down like that, so you could see where my foot, you know. And I was like, oh, it's crap. I mean, easy enough fix. Gypsum is what it is. It could have been worse. I could have fell through it. But I can tell you what, that in many years as I'd been up in the attics and doing that, that's the only time that happened. But I can tell you after that happened, I was very aware of it, you know, and then I'll always catch myself saying it to somebody else. Be careful in the attic. Be careful in the attic because I've been there. But yeah, but it can happen, you know. And
sometimes those attic holes aren't that wide to even get in. But what we'll do is if the scuttle hole, if we can find a piece of ply that can go in at an angle up into the attic and you can use it and it can spread between the trusses, you can almost use that as a guide. Again, you're going to have to move it and figure that out. There's little nifty ways. The one time that I almost kind of the same thing you did. I didn't go all the way through, but I was on my knees on the studs or on the trusses, and my knee gave out on me, man. It just it hit the wood wrong, and it did something. I got really weak, and so I went right in between the studs, and you could hear the gypsum board kind of make that crunch noise, you know. And I'm like, I'm still up there. There's no hole, but my guy's down there. He goes, man, I thought you were gonna come through that thing, man. He said, I heard that boom, and luckily they just had to tack it back up. And
dude, I can tell you, if I had gone through it, you know it's coming, because even back then I wasn't a little boy. So if I was going to go through that ceiling, but yeah, I mean, just got to be really, really careful. Those type of things, you know, no sweat, you know, you can fix the sheetrock. I mean, that can be fixed. I hate sheetrocking, by the way, but that's something that you can easily fix. In my case, it was just enough cracked it that I could push it back up, mud it, tape it. And luckily for me, it wasn't a textured or orange peel like we have out here in Texas. This was in Virginia. And luckily for me, it's an easy fix, right? Because I hate painting, right? And I hate sheetrocking, that type of thing.
That's so, right.
Boy, I tell you what, our chatters tonight are totally zoned out from the chat. I mean, they're still talking about Friday and the crap from that movie.
That's right, man.
Quoting stuff from the movie, man.
That's so awesome. If you go back, though, O did say,
did you?
I guess I have to get a rotary hammer. My boss didn't want to provide one, said to use my Milwaukee hammer drill for them drop-in anchors. And I'll tell you what, O, I went out and bought the 12-volt rotary hammer from
what
Milwaukee.
Brand? Oh, be, yes.
You know, let me see.
Sorry, hold
that?
On.
Here. Right there.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
The knockoff sister for Ryobi. And,
that's right. That's right.
And that little 12-volt, I mean, it ran me $120, but I'll tell you what, it beats any of my 18-volt hammer drill drivers. It beats the DeWalt 20-volt hammer drill driver. I mean, it's designed for those. So if you can get your hands on that 12-volt, and what's really nice is it's lightweight. So if you're doing tubing, or pipe above head, above your head. You can, you know, hold it with one hand, strap it. You're not carrying that big old, you know, the 120 plug-in rotary hammer that's going smack you in the face. This one's nice and neat, and I invested in that for panel upgrades and those drop-in anchors, and it works really good.
Cool. Absolutely. All right, so other than that, residential, let's talk a little bit about commercial safety on site. Obviously, everybody is probably familiar with OSHA, Occupational Health and Safety. Is it administration or association? Administration, I guess. My experience with OSHA on commercial jobs is having them come out to the site after somebody got injured. But what's real big about, and this also goes over to residential, is look, if you're, we probably should talk about that. If you're, a lot of times residential and commercial, people want to use extension cords that are chewed up, wrapped in electrical tape. And again, it's an OSHA violation. To have to repair something with electrical tape. If it's damaged, it should be replaced. OSHA has a really good, assessment. And so, I don't know if Jay can see it, but I'll go over to it for those here. OSHA has a really good assessment here that's for compliance and what have you. They've got steps to follow, falls, ladders, all these things that, scaffolding to be careful of, has great stuff when it comes to electrical and safety. You know, things like extension cords that are damaged, ground pins ripped off of it. Do not use those on a job site. Okay.
Okay. Okay.
You might have survived it right now, but don't do that, because it still is going to impede the integrity of the return path for fault current to clear an overcurrent device on a job site. Even if you're doing temporary power, there is no such thing as temporary death. Okay, so anyway, so that's just some stuff from the OSHA site. So that's at OSHA.gov, and you can go look at it, and you'll see there's what's called a compliance assistant quick chart. And it's just a 7-step process for safety. Okay, sorry. Go ahead, Jay.
No, those extension cords. We were doing, I was a second year apprentice at IEC, and they were going over the safety of extension cords. And they're like, yeah, if you're on the job site and you see those cords, you make sure you cut them in half. And it doesn't matter what trade they are and whoever's using them. It's a safety of the job site. Let me tell you something, man. If you don't want to get your rear end kicked, don't go cutting anybody's extension cords, okay? Right. Especially the painters, the framers. Plumbers, it doesn't matter what the trade is, man. Yeah. Don't go around cutting cords, you guys.
Yeah. But I'll say for me, my guys, I'd always tell them, or anybody, and people would call me and I was consulting with different things in safety. I'd tell him, the moment that your extension cord gets damaged, just replace it.
No brainer. Yeah.
Yeah. There's no sense. And, you might say, yeah, it'd work. It'll fine. You know, the thing about electricity, it always seems to work. Even if it's unsafe, it still seems to work.
And us, we just, as long as it does the job, we're like, it's working.
Well, that's why you see so much crap wiring out there, because it still works. And people look at it and go, it still works. And I'm like, yeah, until somebody gets hurt. And then what are you going to say? What are you going to play stupid? You're going to play dumb at that point? People have told you that that's crap, but you do it anyway. So, so OSHA, think about that. So scaffolding. Any holes that are in flooring, hopefully they, barricade that off. Somebody falls through. My brother, I think you've all heard me tell the story back years ago. My brother fell multiple stories down a hole because they didn't block it off right.
Sure.
Those type of things, being very, very careful. There are a lot of knifeless job sites now, Jay. Where they will not use a knife on a job site. To me, a knife is a tool. If you know how to use it properly, it's not any dangerous than any other tool. Okay? I mean, it's like taking a set of side cutters and cutting your pinky off. Why would you do it? You know? So the same thing with a knife. If you use the knife right and you know how to hold it right and you know how to guard it right and you're stripping NMB or stripping SE or whatever you're doing, then it's not a danger to you. But so many people get in such a hurry that it's just, so I mean, a tool we would usually always have a class on how to properly strip and use a tool, a knife. And people say, well, that's stupid. Why would you have a class on a knife? Anybody knows how to use a knife. Why do you think we now have knifeless job sites? Because right. people don't.
Because they're one of the leading causes of injuries. Because there's yeah. there's only certain reasons why companies will put those type of rules in play. And that's because they'll go back to the safety department and mm-hmm. they'll review the whole last year's worth of injuries. And they'll take whatever that top one is and maybe even top three and try to implement a safety yeah. protocol for it. And that's where you get that no knife. I actually work for IES, which was a commercial outfit, and they would not allow hacksaws or cordless. Yeah, they wouldn't allow the hacksaws on the job. You couldn't use one. You had to use a skill saw to cut your tubing.
Wow.
That's what they and they had a bunch of the what is it, the Makitas? Is that the blue?
I sometimes think I have more control with the hacksaw than I would with the
But the thing is they had those or it's Sawzalls too. Sorry, Sawzalls as well. Okay. That's what they eliminate. They're eliminating the Sawzalls. The hacksaw, if it's a manual one, I think you are good.
Okay.
Because again, it's the manual and you're okay. But right. I think they just wanted skill saws. I don't know what they had, but anywho, I've been with many companies and there's many of those policies.
Yeah. So again, the policies get written because things happen. And, you know, I know at Encore, for example, they don't allow any knives on the property. Though they have certain knives they'll allow you that the blade only comes out so far. And it's approved, and it's basically more like a razor knife. That's it. If you get caught with a different knife, they'll walk you to the gate. You know, there's no second chances on that. So, you know, being safety conscious of things like that, I never had that even back then. The knife, you know, my electrician's knife was near and dear. That type of thing. What else? Safety. Again, scaffolding, ladders. I get a lot of people ask me this. I did a video doing a review of a ladder, like it's a gorilla ladder. And I had, a lot of people, it gets a lot of hits. It gets a lot of people watch that video, not electricians, just watch. And I have, you know, sometimes you get smart Alex that'll say something like that. No righteous electrician would ever use a metal ladder. Oh, I was going to say
baloney.
Something. Yeah, I was going to say it. I was going to say something, but, you know, yeah, I don't have my beep. Dude, you're not always working on thing live, you know, and the first thing to understand about a live work orders is you de-energize it and you put it in a safe position, and then you work on it. You're not working on it live. So, yeah, if you're going to go working on the point of attachment and it's not cut off, and I don't know what you'll be doing up there, but if you're that guy that does that, then maybe you don't want to use a metal ladder. Anywhere else, get over it. You know, it's perfectly fine. Fiberglass are great, but I have those little giants or whatnot work fine. But the worst fall that I ever had on a job was from one of those little giants. Because when it goes up, the rungs are thinner. And I stepped off of it. I think I might have told you this. I stepped off of it and fell off the back of it. One, because I was, you know, young and it was in a hurry and I was doing, you know, slow down. And had nobody preaching safety as much because I was the owner. But in this case, it was luckily for me when I fell off of it that I fell against the sheetrock back wall about halfway down. So I did black out when I hit the ground hard. I think it was up probably about it was one of those long extensions, A-frame. And I was probably up about 8 feet. So it was a pretty good fall. By the time I came through, a few minutes later, one of my helpers was there. And he's like, you're all right, boss. And I'm like, yeah, fine, Bobby. Big old Bobby, about 300-some pound Bobby. And I was like, Bobby, you know, and then joking later, I was like, why didn't you catch me? But, that being careful in ladders, being very deliberate when you go up a ladder and when you come off a ladder. Being very other things. So when would you work on live? Okay, you are going to run into that. Obviously, working on live stuff. If you're going to do service calls, you're not going to shut it all down. You'd be working in the panel. But as I tell home inspectors and other people that I've told them, I said, look, you don't need to go forging in the panel. You can look in the panel. You're an electrician, so you're trained for these type of things. You have insulated conductors that are in there. You know what's live and what's not. You just, you know, you're looking, you're trying to, you're doing some analysis, you're checking terminations and things like that. I had a pair of gloves that I would use that I would put on anytime I was worried about that.
Sure.
That type of thing. I've got a video where I do an analysis of a panel. That panel's hot, but I use a non-conductive probe, and I'm, you know, looking around in there a little bit. But just be careful, okay? I'm not going to get on that soapbox about, you know, some people, that's all they do. That's they preach it. I'm not. I'm just going to tell you, electricians, just obviously be careful. It only takes a tenth of an amp to kill you, and if you get bonded right, that's all she wrote. So, yeah. Don't go on a service call barefooted. How about that? There you go. Don't do that, okay? You know, you don't want to go work on a concrete floor and working in a panel barefooted. It might not be a good day for you. But other than that,
I wonder if those little giants are more popular because if you're kind of a side job kind of guy and you're
they using I mean mine it. My if you watch my video, it's available over on the YouTube channel. On the it's the same thing. It's the same thing like, you know, Little Giants is the monster, you know, gorilla ladder, whatever. They're all the same concept, but you get, there's so many. You can go to one job, and like I have one that I have now. That thing will go up. I could do a chandelier in a 18 to 19 foot ceiling from one ladder and then open it up, and it gets up as high as 26 feet. If I have to get something to an outside floodlight or something, I mean, so one ladder can just do so much stuff, right?
Right. And that's why I think the guys like that ladder, and they're probably reviewing that episode a lot because they're about to invest a couple $100 into something, and they want to make sure that they know how to work it.
Yeah. And it's a good ladder. I tell you the Gorilla ladder works good, but I do get the comments from people. They'd say, no electrician would use a metal ladder for electric work.
I'm sure.
Like, come on.
Coming from a guy or gal that doesn't even own a ladder. But, yes. Hey, it's okay. Yeah, it's okay. Yeah. I like how you can tell me what I need to invest in. But, you
yeah,
know,
yeah.
It's you're okay, Marcus.
Yeah, you're watching the video, right?
But yeah, you're watching, right? Yeah. Marcus says he likes the hat, man. Thank you, Marcus. Hopefully I will have these out for sale later on this summer. We're going to try to brand it and do some clothing line as well. Maybe kind of like what Paul does there at Electrician Pride. So hopefully we can get that over there as well. But yeah, this is the design that is the second design. We have also the green goblin.
Yeah. We used to have that logo that was up. Yeah. The goblin dude. Thank you. All right, so I mean that's and we definitely can get that all that swag as well online if we needed to, whenever you're ready. What else? So that was, you know, safety. I mean, again, that's just the safety aspects of it. Don't try to do anything that you're not qualified for. Ask somebody for assistance if necessary. Don't try to be a one man show. Don't try to be a superhero. Those type of things. So.
Yeah, one thing about commercial too, I came up into the commercial world is your work area. A lot of times we worked off of the carts. You know, you'd go to the material box, you'd grab your cart if it wasn't already in your work area that from the day before, and you'd work off your cart, and you know, you'd put your tools on there, maybe some of the company tools, the bigger stuff. You'd put your hand tools on there, maybe some materials. A lot of times we'd put we'd mount four square deeps onto the corners or whatnot and throw connectors in there. Again, you could do whatever. I've seen guys put ladders and their pipe benders attached to their movable cart. But the thing is you're not the only guy in that workspace at times. So, you know, make sure your carts are clean. Make sure that if you are bending conduit or tubing or pipe, whatever you're bending, make sure you're picking up those little pieces too, those little cut pieces. A lot of times I would have a 5-gallon bucket with me for any of those little small items that, you know, we call them little roly polies, because you'd back up and your foot would get caught on a 1/2-inch one and you'd go backwards and right on your butt you went. So I think I think the professionalism, even if you're an apprentice, you'll never get in trouble for being clean and neat.
Right.
That's all it is. And as long as the company's paying you to do it, just make sure you're nice and clean, sure. Man. That's all.
Yeah, so another comment that was made about intoxication on the job site, I can tell you right now, not going to work on my job sites. If I even smell that you've been drinking and you come to my job site, you take your ass home.
Yeah.
You're not going to work on my, I don't care what you do after you get off. I don't care what you do on the weekend. Your butt comes to my job site. Now, if I'm not there because I'm the owner, Jay's maybe doing something else. But can you imagine what would happen if Jay got a call from one of his customers and says, Jay, I hate to do this. I don't want to be a busybody, but one of your guys, I can smell him. He smells like alcohol. He's loud and obnoxious. And I don't want to be that guy, Jay, but it is my site. My owners could come in. Somebody, how does Jay handle that? I can tell you how Paul handles that. Paul stops whatever he's doing, jumps in his truck. He hits that job site. Yep. I pull that person aside. Okay. And I just simply go to them. I say, dude, and this is how I am. I say, dude, open your mouth and blow in my face. And he goes, oh, in my face. And I smell alcohol on him. I'm like, get your crap and get out. Look, it'd be tough working for me. I'm not going to lie. Okay. I was tough to work for. But I would teach you along the way. And I expected as much back from you as I gave, that type of thing. So anyway, I didn't have a tolerance for that crap. To me, it just drags the profession down. So I don't have any tolerance for that crap.
Yeah. And Circuit even says, Circuit Plus, he says a big issue for us isn't drinking. It's the weed. And same thing like you just mentioned, man. What you do,
I don't care if it's work. Yeah, if it's your Colorado and it's legal in Colorado, it don't matter. It's still not legal on my job site.
Exactly, and don't bring it on there. All my guys know. Even guys that may partake after. Again, I've dabbled into worse stuff, and I get it. And I'm blessed to be where I'm at now. And so I get it's legal, it's recreational, have fun, man. But for that 8 to 10 hours that you're on my job site, you'll be sober, you'll be clean-minded, you'll be professional, and you have a lot on your shoulders even as an apprentice. And if you're just that guy that shows up and you go from job to job, I'll notice that probably even before I hire you, because I'll have some questions for you, and we've gone through that. And it sucks because us as contractors or construction workers, we get a bad rep, right? We're the guys that didn't make it to college. We're the guys that didn't. Well, some of us. I'm sorry. The stereotypical type is we are the crap, but the crap is getting the stuff done, and you can still be professional. So again, I don't know what you're laughing at, but
what are you laughing says at? What's going his, on? O says that he wants to give his foreman weeds. Needs to chill him out.
Come bring him a little party bag or whatever you guys call it. Say, hey man, try some of this.
Yeah. I mean, again, I tell people all the time, you can do whatever you want with your company. We're not here. I'm not here to tell you. I give consulting to people about companies and owners how to deal with their company and how to do soft skills and how to, those type of things. But I'm also not a candy coating kind of guy. I give it to you blunt. I tell you how it is. And there's a reason why you get nice looking shirts, okay, with the monograms. There's a reason why you have T-shirts with your name, your company on it. There's a reason why you come to a job site looking a certain way. There's a reason why you don't fight on a job site. The reason why you don't cuss all over the job site, although I hear that all the time. It's just why? Is that something that's just got to come out of your mouth every 10 seconds on a job site? Is that necessary? You do what you want. We're just talking about from our perspective. You can call us a ninny and whatever. It's fine. Dude, I've been called worse and don't care. But the reality is that wouldn't happen on a job site with me. That type of thing. Now, CBD has been proven to, I mean, that's legal. It's not affecting your how you work.
No, it doesn't affect your driving either.
Doesn't affect your driving. It's, those type of things. So Paul Blunt, yeah.
Paul said,
you know, somebody would have had to have said that, right? I mean,
you know, because back you said the Friday reference, and that's what they do. So I think we got a bunch of guys that walked it.
Movies,
you know, with commercial too is you get these guys that again you're around a bunch of other trades. They may be cursing, you may be cursing. In commercial sites, I think it's the normal.
It must be. It must be. It didn't seem to be around the sites that I was on, but Dustin over Electrician U. He likes to drop the F bombs, and he has a massive following, so everybody loves the F bomb. I get it. Hey, look, we're not talking about on a job site you being an angel. That's not what we're talking about. All right. We're talking about some of the stuff with just it's every other word out of somebody's mouth on a job site is F this, F that, F that, to the point where you other trades, and this is where we talk about other trades that might look at it funny, you always have a potential for owners to be around, okay? They're paying the bill, right? I just don't want to risk it. I'll do all the cussing when I leave. I just don't need to do it on the job site. But it is normal for our trade to be a bit foul-mouthed. And again, I'm not trying to say that I'm holier than thou to say that because I dropped my own share.
Sure.
Point is, there's a time and a place for everything.
And there's a volume level on it too, guys. I mean,
you don't need to let everybody in the block.
Right.
You know what I mean? You don't need to let everybody in the entire job site know that you just dropped it. Beep, beep. You know what I'm saying? But do each his own. Do each his own. Don't want to, you know, if you feel like that's what you got to do, go for it. It's just not something that I would do. I know that has nothing to do with safety, but, you know, anything like that. But
you can also get written up and get kicked off job sites and things like that with actually you can cause fights. I've seen people get in big matches, cursing matches with each other. One of my project manager and one of my crew leads, who was an apprentice before he became a crew lead with us, he showed up. Okay, so the project manager showed up right on time. It was 7 o'clock. He was there around 6:50. The crew lead at the time showed up right on time, and there's this apprentice, Andrew, who didn't show up. He was 10 minutes late. Well, it's snowing. These guys are hauling in all the tools. This apprentice shows up with a coffee in his hand. And he's like, hey, 10, 15 minutes late with a coffee. And he's like, hey, I'm here. And my project manager just lost it. He freaking blew it. He said, you'd have been here on time if you didn't stop and get that coffee and blah, blah, blah. And I'm loading stuff in and you need to be here. And he had a valid point. But at the end of the day, they got into that basement. They got into a little bit of a shoving match. And we, you know, luckily enough, we did not lose that contract. And it didn't escalate into actual physical blows. But it was a point where it could have escalated that far and it could have jeopardized
our contract. So I have a belief in my trade as a hierarchy. An apprentice should not be arguing with a journeyman, and a journeyman should not be arguing with a master. They can have a difference of opinion, they can have a disagreement, but it should not be a full-fledged yelling match argument. It's just me, right?
Yep. For sure. Thank you, Soldier of God, for the $5 donation.
Yes, thank you.
We appreciate it. We love donations.
Yeah, absolutely appreciate it.
But yeah, there's definitely that. And now what's crazy is you talk to that crew lead and you bring up that incident and he'll be like, yeah, man, I was such an idiot that day.
They get embarrassed.
Oh, he because now he's a crew lead, and when his apprentice is even 5 minutes late, he's losing it. You know what I mean? And, and that wasn't, you know, and he was 15 minutes late on that one. So I think once they move up in those roles and you give them those responsibilities, they look back and go, you know what? There was a time where I was a jackasser. I just wasn't. You know, I wasn't doing what I was supposed to do, but you know what? He stuck through it. He has his license now, and he's one of my best crew leads. So,
and they work
sometimes
through it.
Stuff happens.
Yep, so. They work through it. And again, there's a lot of times we say there's no mistakes. There's just lessons, and we learn them. And just hope that if it was a lesson that can qualify as a mistake. It wasn't a costly mistake. That way we can chalk it up as just a lesson. We're learning. And, you know, a mistake can be overcome if it's not too bad. But I tell you, if you don't follow safety practices, you don't keep things organized on a job site, you don't look for, you know, be aware of the hazards that face you, things like that, sometimes you don't get a second chance and that type of thing. So just be careful out there when it comes to that type of thing in safety. As far as getting along with other trades, I know we kind of ran out of time on tonight's topic, but talking about working with other trades, you know, I never had a problem working with other trades. I always had a little bit of iffy with the sheetrockers or gypsum guys, because, you know, I was always, you know, puckered up whether or not they're going to cover up a box or two or something here, that they're in such a big hurry, or they're cutting out my boxes and they just, and then it's my fault if my guys, if we didn't push the wire back further enough into the box and they could chew the heck out of it with their rotozip, or something to that, you know, to that nature. But usually I didn't have that many confrontations with the other trades. In fact, my brother, for example, he gets along with all of the trades, and they all, you know, he's got friends that are obviously the plumbers and they help him out and everything. I never made relationships with the other trades. I just went in and did my job, and I wanted to be the end guy. I wanted to be in. I'd used to tell him, I'd say, tell me when the plumber and the mechanical guy have their stuff in, then I'll come out and get mine in. And they would always go, "Hell, Paul, but you know, you might delay the project." I'm like, I won't delay the project, because they want you all there sometime at the same time doing everything. And I would say, this, let me get in at the end. Now, that didn't work all the time, but that's what my preference was, to be at the end. It's not that I didn't get along with the other trades. I just prefer to come in at the end, because it's so much easier for them to try to, you know, move my wire when I don't want them to, and then nobody tells me about it, or they do something and cut something or do something and I don't know about it. Obviously, if I come in electrical and the plumbing's already in or the mechanical's already in, I'm not going to screw with their stuff. You know, it's, you know, so I'm just going to work around it, that type of thing. But yeah. I got along fine with all the other trades. I didn't have any real disagreement with anybody.
I think if you respect everybody, you give the respect and you receive a certain respect on the job site, then you can work around it. There's going to be issues. Bigger commercial job sites, you're going to run into HVAC lines that are in our tubing ways, our raceways. You know, you always have those issues. But again, it really just depends, kind of like how you and I were speaking before about inspectors. Yeah. It's all about how you present yourself to them. If you're acting like a big hot shot, and to the inspector, you're probably going to get, he's going to pick everything for you. Same on those job site with other trades. You act like a hot shot, those guys are tough too.
I can tell you, as an inspector, the more, you know, if you the more you talk, the more you boast, the more you get in my face, the more I'm going to find wrong. And my microscope gets much broader the more you keep talking. The more you keep arguing, right, the more I'm going to keep looking and that type of thing. And people say, well, you shouldn't do that. Well, then you should. It's kind of like arguing with a cop. You don't argue with a cop. Cop says, put your hands up. You put your hands up. So same, you know. So, I mean, you know, I'm just not going.
Why should I do that?
Why should I listen to you? It has something to do with the badge and the gun. You know, I'm just going to say, whatever. You know, I just not. I just, you know, I don't understand any of it. But at the end of the day, arguing with the inspector over it's not gonna do you any good at all. Okay.
Yeah. I had an inspection today, the one I called you, I was talking to you before, and we had a meter release and a rough in inspection, and we passed the meter release, although we still have to send the grounding electrode to the cold water. They bonded to a spigot and not the actual water going out. So he said, listen, I get it. You got your two ground rods. I know you'll get this in. I'll check it at final. And I said, of course. And then we had the rough. And believe it or not, we failed on the homeowner ran a two-gang low voltage box with a Smurf tube going into the box. Well, he didn't have a proper three-quarter connector. Yeah, the ENT. And he didn't have the proper ENT connector. He just put tape around the end and shoved it in the box. Yeah. And the inspector's like, you need a connector on those. And I'm like, yeah, I don't think we did that. It doesn't matter. There are certain things that the inspectors look for, and that was one of them. And if you're going to fail me on that, I did pretty good on a kid's remodel.
I can fix that. Don't worry about it. Is that all you're worried about? Because you know that it ain't got nothing to do with what you just did, right? So you're like, is that it? You know? But there's other applications where they want connectors on certain things like that, and it's just there for physical damage. It's not designed to be connected to the box. So there are some cases where I would have sleeved something and then pulled it away from the box and then used a built-in clamp to the box, and then he would have said, what about that ENT? I'm like, that's just there to protect it. Even though ENT can't protect something from physical damage, I could just choose to use it even if it was in the walls and it didn't need to be there. So there's conversations you can have with an electrical inspector, but being that I was one and oversaw them, they're not looking for a fight. But if you go with a fighting attitude, you know, and like O says, y'all probably heard me say this a million times, you can't fail something if you can't find a reference for it. If you want to fail it just because you want to fail it, then we're going to have a conversation.
Sure.
If you want something and you can support it and you give me a code reference and I did it wrong, you're not going to get an argument from me. I will fix it. Right. But you have to tell me what the code, you have to tell me what is wrong. Not just because you don't like something. You have a personal feeling about something. I don't care about your personal feeling. Okay. I don't. What I need you to do is, yep, see, Circuit, you've said that a couple of times tonight, also with the other one. That is, none of that is true. I know, you're totally kidding, but you said it twice. First of all, you said about educators. You didn't think I saw that, did you? And now you're talking about inspectors. I hear that a lot. So some of the greatest, best inspectors that I've ever seen were awesome electricians. It's just we get to a certain age or we want to, you know, today the inspection is a profession. Right. People go into it wanting to be an inspector straight out of school. They go in and they want to be, you know, that's what they want to do. And there's a lot of avenues for training for inspectors. Now they have to take the tests and all this stuff and all this, and they can become CBOs, certified building officials. And it's a career path. And I know some very sharp, Susan Newman Sears, who's over usually on our Facebook. She's been an inspector for years. I would imagine she'd be an amazing electrician, but has made a career doing inspections and does amazing at it. Super sharp young lady. That's an awesome young lady. Beautiful woman. And she does a great job. So, yeah. You know, I don't judge that, but I know you're joking. But at the end of the day, people that say, well, Paul, you teach, could you still turn the tools? Come on down to McKinney, Texas, and I'm more than happy. You want to come on down. We'll build two stud walls up, and we'll do some wiring, and we'll just see how educator may be done. Now, there are some educators out there that probably were electricians for about a year, and that was it. I get it. Then they probably can't do it. And there's been some that were inspectors, and some that are very well known educators that were inspectors for a short amount of time, and they couldn't do that anymore. But sometimes that's just not their calling, right? I did electrical for 20 plus years. After that, and I still own electrical contracting business. I prefer to teach. That's just me. But it's kind of hard to teach it and talk about the. See, that's the one thing, Jay. We talk about educators. It's really hard to teach it and not get into the weeds and get very detailed.
Sure.
If you haven't done it. So that's what I call surface code. When somebody talks about just the surface or just what's in the code, or do they get deep into it and talk about the application and the installation and all those little pieces that are involved in it? There's no way you couldn't talk about those things if you didn't do it. But I can promise you one thing, wiring a house today is the same as wiring a house as it was 20 years ago. Ain't nothing changed. You have other boxes, you have other different options, but non-metallic is non-metallic. MC is MC. Connectors are connectors. Blacks to blacks, whites to whites, greens to greens, bond the box, green ground screw, devices, receptacles, okay, hot, neutral side. Dude, it ain't changed. You know, just because you don't have a 60-some-year-old man holding up trade size 4 rigid conduit 24 hours a day every day doesn't make them a man, doesn't make them an electrician. Just makes them somebody who needs to find something else to do because they're getting old and they need to find something else to do because can't people be holding trade size 4 above their head all day? You know what I'm saying? Anyway, sorry about that.
I think that goes with the, with improving in, into the trade. You know, you start as apprentice, work your way up to
Master, CRW. Service Master, easy, Circuit Plus. Those are easy. Master, easy. Service Master, easy.
Oh, yeah.
Easy. Whether it's through the roof penetration on the side or at the eave, that's the easiest thing to do, going from the meter and go up. I find CT systems and big meter sets the easiest thing to do because you buy the equipment, it's already there. You just install the equipment. And it, so it's not complicated. But people want to overcomplicate it because it makes it sound really good. This is what I do, and I'm better than somebody because I do big 4,000 amp switch gear. The hard part is the laying out the raceways underground. The hard part is the making sure that you get the layout right. Once you get really good at the layout, making sure that your raceways are going to come up in the right location, then it's a matter of just pulling your wires and make sure you follow all the other rules. And then termination, the terminations are there. There's no brain surgery when it comes to switch gear. You know what I'm saying? I mean, a lot of people think, oh, God, 6,000 amp switch gear. Dude, 1,200 amp switch gear, 6,000 amp switch gear, it's all switch gear. Most of it's internal componentry. All you're taking is your wire to the lugs. That's it, right? That's it. Once you get it, you and big equipment like that, you're going to have the manufacturer come in and do testing, and they're going to test the equipment. They're going to put it through diagnostic, okay? If it needs GFP, they're going to come in and do that testing because you got to document it. Electricians typically aren't the ones that are going to do that. Okay, I'm pay that kind of money for a piece of switch gear. Guess what, Jay? If I'm paying the amount of money for a 6,000 amp switch gear from Eaton or Schneider, who do you think's ass is going to be on that site when it's time to charge that system up and do the documentation?
Oh, those guys.
They're going to be there. Yeah. Okay,
one of their representatives for sure.
Yeah, you want my money? You're going to be there. I'm not doing that. Okay, so. Yeah, so I think it's a lot of times it's very repetitive what we do, but again, a lot of guys now, I have saw a guy, one guy was going all over Instagram, he was going because he was showing all the conduit that he bends, and he was posting something saying, I'm a real electrician because I bend conduit. And it just made me, you know, the way he bends it. And I was like, I really wanted to go, yeah, well, here's my license, I'm a real electrician too, but you know what? I don't have a problem using pre-bent 90s and pre-bent 45s if I had to. I don't have a problem with it. Because guess what? My check cashes the same as yours, so it, you know. Right. You know. But it's a skill. It's an art. It looks good and should be proud of it.
It's an art that's kind of fading away. People don't want to bend the tubing. We don't even have guys out there that want to teach, you know, we don't have the leaders right now that want to teach these other guys. There's a real separation from when I was in the trade and what we would call the old heads or the old guys, you know, the guys who've been doing it 20, 30 years.
Yeah.
And you know, and unfortunately a lot of those guys, they you know, they don't feel like they have to give back. And
sure.
And so again, maybe I'm stepping on some toes or going to call that kind of, you know, the old heads out, but it's, you know, you want to give these guys something to remember. Now, granted, if you don't have time to show them how to bend the pipe, I get that, but there's nothing wrong with also bringing them to the shop and showing them how to do some 90s or some offsets. That's what I want to do with my guys. I was supposed to set up a time here, but people are out of town, but yeah, we'll put on a little class. But it is an art. For when I came in, it was an art. Now it's kind of MC and FMC, just easier ways to make that raceway connect from point A to point B.
And some people, you know, I do hear, we looking at some of the comments and things, I do sometimes hear people say, people will say, you know, rigid or intermediate or EMT, that running MC is, it's not as good or it looks crappy or whatever. See, now I totally disagree. If you run, you can run MC and it look just as good as any old raceway that you would run. And you can also make it look as crappy. In fact, there's more room to make it look crappy with MC because it is slightly flexible, right?
Yes.
Than it would be running something else. But you know what? What I found, Jay, is for me, I guess I look at it slightly different from an owner's perspective. If I was a union guy and I'm doing work, right? And I'm doing union work somewhere in Chicago, somewhere like that. And all they run is rigid or intermediate or EMT or whatever. And they do a great job. It looks beautiful. I ain't no lie. Everything's got to be worked out. You got to know. It takes effort. I get it. But for me, that's not something that I, you know, was cared too much about to be the best conduit bender out there. Me, I was about getting the job done. I wanted to look nice. Don't get me wrong. But I didn't have a problem if I had to use a pre-bent 90 or a 45 or an offset or whatever. If I had to do it, it didn't bother me. And from a company perspective, I need to get the job done. So I am not going to sit around while somebody spends an overt amount of time making it look beautiful so they can take pictures of it and post it on Instagram. I need to get the job done. If you're good and you're quick and you can make it look good and you're not spending extra time on it, have at it. But it's not me. I don't place that personally as craftsmanship. Just because you can run conduit well and you're really good at it and you can do the different step bends and I don't look at that as craftsmanship. I look the whole picture as craftsmanship. Being able to do an installation using all the available options, because everything that's listed, what doesn't matter the type of wiring method in Chapter 3, if it's okay for that job and you can use it, that you do it right, you do it efficient, you wire it up, you don't have issues, you don't have things you have to keep correcting because they're wrong, how you carry yourself on a job site, how professional you are, all of that to me is the workmanship.
Yep.
And the funny thing about it is the National Electrical Code talks about workmanship, but very few people ever fail because somebody says that you didn't do it in a workmanlike manner, because workmanship is in the eye of the beholder.
Sure.
It's what looks great to you might look sucky to somebody else, but it gets the job done. It is compliant, so I mean, no offense. I mean, I don't think of workmanship in a sense that just because somebody can run some conduit, right?
Right.
It's totally more than that. You know, guy does a switch gear. You don't even see the raceways coming in underneath. If it's an underneath, it's a lateral or something coming in. But you see everything going out of it. And these are raceways, rigid, intermediate, EMT, what have you, coming up and out of it, whether it's being supported on trapeze, or whatnot from point A to point B, you know, you want to make it look nice, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there's an art to it, in its own sense. You know, you want to make it look good, but also, you know, you're not spending all day on it. And trying to, I know some people do formulas and they try to, you know, do the square root of something however they do it. They really get technical. You know what, man, I go up there, I measure and I'm putting it to work. And if it doesn't work the first time, I take it down, I do my adjustments and I go right back up there. And, and you know what, I know enough just to get by, just to be dangerous in the piping. And so I could hold my own. I think the toughest pipe that's manual bending is an inch and a quarter. I have to make sure that I have all my tools on. I have to get someone on my shoulders and have that real weight for that inch and a quarter. But other than that, 1 inch, 3/4, 1/2 inch, I think 1/2 inch is probably the hardest because it's so small that you can go from a 30-degree bend to a 35 within just a little a little small little boop, as I call it, boop. And
yeah, when I was in school, we spent probably 3-4 months just bending with a Benfield bender. And, you know, and it wasn't until my senior year that we started doing a lot with hydraulics. But we worked with the benders and when I was in trade school, and I went for 2 years, 5 days a week. And we learned the different pieces of it and everything like that. But, you know, I never was a big fan of saying, ooh, I want to do a big old job of EMT or rigid or whatever. I did what we had to do to get the job done. And to be honest with you, I never really took pictures of it. I think it's just become a thing of in the last couple of years where everybody takes pictures. And that's great. You know what I mean? But, I don't have a problem with PVC either. I run PVC in a heartbeat. In a heartbeat. I don't have no problem with any of the wiring methods. Okay. So, obviously commercial, I follow what the drawings are, whatever the specifications are, whatever they want in the drawing, the engineer spec'd out, that's what they want. If it's rigid, intermediate, it doesn't matter. Again, I can tell you when it started getting into the larger EMTs and the large ridges, we would buy pre-done 90s and stuff like that because it's just so much more efficient. I wasn't out there to show how beautiful I was that I could use a hydraulic to bend these things. And no, I didn't. You can. It's fine. I didn't do it. So, Jay, that makes me a not a good electrician because I didn't do this.
I didn't think you were from the time I knew you. But now you're saying it on the air. So I guess no.
That's right.
You know, Elwood says,
outwire your ass, buddy.
Come on. Mm. Come on. Bring it. I'm the basement king.
Okay. You know, that could be a pay-per-view event. We could do a pay-per-view. To get a pay-per-view wiring match. Would that be something? How many people would pay for a pay-per-view? The old guy versus the young gun. You know, we'll get a wall, and it'll have a predetermined what we have to do. Because that's actually when I won the Vicacon, National Vica Contest back. Oh, you have one of those, Jay? No, you don't. I do. Okay. So way back 30 years ago, you know, back to the dinosaur age when I won that, we were given a set of drawings, and we had a wall. Like a cubicle, and we had to follow the rules and do all the wiring. And there were little things that they would tell you, like the finished floor was a certain thickness. And all the reason they were telling you all these things is because they would come and measure your box height and everything. And if you didn't compensate for the floor or you didn't compensate for other things, then they would ding you. You'd lose points. So they would give you a list and it would tell you the finished floor. And you would wonder, and some people would wonder, why are you telling me what the finished floor is? 3/4 inch tongue and groove, this, or what is the substrate, whether it was a 1/2 inch sub and then it was 3/4 tongue. You had to figure, okay, all right, so I need to make sure my boxes, in the real world, it wouldn't matter, right?
Right.
But in a competition like that, it did matter. Everything mattered. Neatness, everything mattered. And so that type of thing. So pretty neat. It's changed a lot. They do a lot more. They do a lot more bending, and those guys would bend circles around me. I mean, some of the stuff that those guys do on those competitions now, you can only imagine. I mean, they still have a lot to learn when it comes to real electrical aspects of things. But as far as bending and things like that, man, they got that stuff down, buddy. I've seen some of the guys bend, but they don't make you any more of an electrician than anybody else. I mean, we all are the keepers of the light. I like to say, right? The gods of current.
The gods of current. That's right. Bring it. The
gods of current.
You know, O says he watches those electrical competitions on the Sparky channels. I've actually seen that channel too, and man, those guys, they're in it deep. I mean, they're competing against each other. Mm-hmm. They're going against the clock. I don't think they can wear tool belts, so they're working off of some type of platform that they have their tools stationary. Mm-hmm. I don't know all the rules and regulations. Maybe some are different. But yeah, when you get into that competition, you really have to know, like what you were saying, what they're asking you to do.
Yeah.
And what measurements you're going for. And that's probably why you ended up on top, was because you understood and you did your research on that, and you came out successfully in your tournaments. I've never
done a stand-up. Well, we were all kids, right? We were all – this is back when I was, you know, 17 and 18. This was competing while I was – my program was in high school, okay?
Oh, okay.
So I was a two-year program. So I was there every day for two full years for that part of it. And, you know, to be honest with you, when I went to compete, I was already mentally like, you know, because I had my brother, who my brother was big into the electrical, and he was previous ahead of me at the school. So he was at a certain, you know, ranking in the school's history because we both had the same instructor. And, you know, and I was at the top of the school's history, and so I had something to prove. But I took it – I was taking night courses in NEC when the kids were playing, okay? Yeah. I wouldn't change it if I went back, but, you know, I didn't, it's not like I had all these girls anyway, you know, wasn't that popular with the ladies, you know? So I played golf, okay, in high school and all that kind of stuff, you know, I did play football. They called me Piggins, you know, play on John Riggins. They called me Paul Piggins because I was a fat little running back. But at the end of the day, I think that the reason is that I was so heavy into it that when we went into the competition, I had already been wiring stuff in the field. I'd already been doing stuff, so I was already into it. And they just didn't. They were young, and they didn't care as much. Now they're probably great now. They're probably doing wonders. I don't know. I don't even stay in touch with anybody that I went to school with back then. They all thought I was a little different because of my drive for electrical. They were like, Paul, relax. It's just electrical, dude. We're just trying to get through school. I'm like, no, this is my career. Yeah. So anyway, can you imagine?
Sure.
I don't know where we talked about, where we went on all that. Sure. We went all over the place tonight. I mean, we went everywhere. Great. Anyway. Oh, I did remember something. Anthony is asked a couple times what our thought is. Anthony, I forgot. What our thought is on wearing life preservers, I guess, or life jackets when working on docks. Well, you know what, Anthony? The limited amount of marinas that I've worked on, the marina was already there. The dock's already there. When I go to a pier, I'm going on vacation, and I go out on a pier. I don't go out on the pier and throw a life jacket on. So if I'm going to work on that pier, unless I'm working out over the water or out underneath the pier or somewhere where I could fall in the water, then maybe. I can swim pretty good, so I don't really, you know, have a problem with that. But I've never had to do that. Most of the wiring and stuff that we did weren't underneath the dock. It was actually parallel with the dock, or it wasn't anything that would require me to wear a life jacket. Now, as far as OSHA is concerned, I don't even know if OSHA has a rule on it. You'd have to go look at OSHA.gov or whatever and see, but I'm not aware of one of that type of things, those type of stuff. But no, I probably would not wear a life preserver because I don't know that it's required. On a boat, you can't require it, but I'm not sure on a dock, okay? So I don't know. I probably wouldn't, so I don't know how I can answer that question for you. So
yeah, I don't think I would either, unless it was required. If it was something that we had to do mandatory, then yeah. But other than that, it just would be something that's more in my way. Unless the life preserver had maybe pockets for my tools, and then I could work off of it.
There you go.
You know, maybe there you go. Maybe Nate Anthony says, could design that and
Nate says there's a fall protection is not required on a lift next to the water. Life preservers are okay. I can't neither confirm or deny that. And you know, my old saying, Nate, is that I always tell people put up or shut up. So you'd have to show me that in OSHA rules somewhere for me to know that. But other than that, yeah, I'm one of those guys that don't believe anything unless I read it and see it. So, but you know, might be the case. So
I'm definitely not wearing them in basements, even though they flood. I'm definitely not wearing them in basements.
You better, because you never know. So, you might be in the middle of a basement and there'd be a flash flood.
I may need it. I may need it.
You know, you got to have GFCI protection now, whether it's finished or unfinished. So that's right. The hazard's there, baby. Well, guys, I think that's going to be it for tonight. We went to about 9:30. Great show on just talking about general safety. Just kind of talked about general safety. Went to a bunch of different places. Jumped up on soapboxes every now and then. Talked about working with other trades. I don't have any problem. There's not a whole lot to talk about. I don't know if you had any incident with the other trades, but I have always gotten along with the other trades. I just usually want to wait until they're done before I come in. I'm like, it's done. And then let me in. Or I'm in the first one in, and I hate being first, right? But sometimes it happens, right? Scheduling and all this kind of stuff, scheduling and whatnot. It's just, I will tell you that anytime I'm the first one in, Jay, I do not wait until it's sheetrocked for me to come back. I will confess, not that I don't trust them, but anytime that I was the first one in, I would visit. I would always call the, you know, whoever hired me, the contractor or whatever, general GC, and I would say something like, I just call the phone after a week or two. I say, hey, man, if you're sheetrockers, you're not sheetrocking yet, are you? When are you planning to sheetrock? Oh, we're sheetrocking next week. The plumbers are just finishing a mechanical. I would make a trip back to the job site. I'm sorry. I was always paranoid like that, and I would walk it quickly to see if the plumbers or the mechanical guys moved anything of ours or moved a stud, anything that's going to cause me later. If I was the first one in, I always had to go make another visit. I couldn't help it.
Oh, of course.
Couldn't help it. If I'm the last one out, then I'm you know, okay. Okay.
So the thing about being first in too is you end up running your cables in certain areas and people are taking off your staples. So by the time when you go back, just like I did today on that rough inspection, I go back and I could see where the SCR for the range was stapled previously. Mm-hmm. Well, someone went in behind us and undid the staples. Luckily I had one next to me where I could, you know, put it back on, but that's the thing about being one of the first ones as an electrician is you have a lot of pieces and parts. And if you're the first one in, then they have to work around your stuff. It's a lot easier for us to work around theirs when theirs is already in, you know. They need to take up a whole bay. Maybe they need to take up a whole stud area.
Let's be truthful. Ours is more flexible than theirs.
Let's be
fair. Whether they're dealing with, you know, hard duct or whatever they're doing, and they're, you know, ours is a little more accommodating, sure. But it can be devastating if they need to move it to get out of the way because they're not going to pick up the phone and call you, right? And my brother had a relationship with plumbers or mechanical guys that would pick up the phone and call him and say, "Hey, Todd, I got to do this, I got to do that," or you know, and let him know. But for me, I mean, I had a good relationship with them. But I know they wouldn't pick up the phone and tell me, "Hey, Paul, I just moved one of your cables because I needed to go down there with a duck or something like that." They wouldn't do that. So if I'm going to be in there first, I'm always going to do a follow-up to see once I think before they sheetrock. And if I'm the last one in there, then I don't have to worry about it. I just wait until it's time to come in. They call me to do the trim out, that type of thing.
Sure.
So, you know, you have to be. I mean, I just was paranoid like that, you know. So... well, that's going to be it for tonight, I guess, Jay, unless you have something else you want to share with everybody. I don't know of anything else to talk about tonight on this episode, okay?
So no, looks like we got some suggestions for some future shows. Maybe we will get into a knife one.
I got a neat knife. I don't know where it is right now.
Probably do a knife and maybe just... I know you might even show off some of your firearms. I don't know. I have only a few if we wanted to do something like that.
I don't know if I want to see my guns. I don't think if people want to see my arsenal.
make like a fun show about it or even tools. Yeah, that would be a good one. And then Anthony said something about GFP. That's more probably up your alley. So
yeah, but Anthony is eat up with the Marina stuff, buddy. I mean, just Anthony, you are eat up with Marina stuff. Okay, he just does all kinds of Marina stuff, you know. Because I'm sure the GFP, other than the dealing with the applications for three phase and when you have to have GFP and all that stuff, he's probably more talking about for Marina applications in Article 555 and stuff like that. Which we got to have a show on that, and maybe get Anthony on the show for that because he likes to, you know, does a lot with that. The marina stuff. In fact, I think we talked this week, that type of thing.
Cool.
Pay-per-view. A wiring. You know what? Jay needs a vacation. Maybe it's easier. Jay comes down to Texas. Jay, if you come down to Texas, drag your tools. I'll make sure that we have two walls set up, with 2x4 walls set up and boxes and everything. And we'll video it live, and we'll have two cameras set on it, and we'll have a timer, and we'll go head to head. That'd be pay per view.
Let me tell you something there, Paul. You don't want any smoke with me, buddy. Okay,
because
I'm gonna dust you, brother.
You might want to
purchase an extra Ryobi or two if they start failing on you, because I'm coming with those whole hogs, and there's no mercy with those things, man.
You don't know what Paul's got in his arsenal. You don't know what I bring to the table. Maybe I'm just stumping Ryobi, but you don't know what's actually out in the box.
But you're really going to be using Milwaukee. I know it.
That's my right angle. My right angle extension Milwaukee. It goes right back to the corded one. Always old school. Back to the cord. Not going to the cordless. Yeah. Anyway. So.
Oh, that's right. You're going to have all those extension cords, tripping hazard. I'm going to be, you know, tripping on your cords and
only one
and
that's going to only ankle. Only one that's going to be a hazard is you, because you're going to be, you know, choking on my dust, buddy. That's it.
Oh, bring it.
Yeah, that's it's all. On. Okay. All right, everybody. Appreciate all of you. Till next time. Again, remember, go to electricianlive.com, and yeah, Jay's going to cut my cord. Probably would. Go to electricianlive.com. That's where you see the updates and everything on the future shows. We will get it updated. Hopefully I'll get it updated to some future shows. We will see you next week on Electrician Live. Till next time, folks, stay safe. God bless.
Electrician Live with your host, Paul Abernathy and Jay Grunberg.